welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. On this week's podcast, we talk about everything from Peter Drury joining NBC to record-breaking viewing numbers for the UEFA Champions League, plus USMNT and Mexico national team games coming up, and everything in between. And this week, we have a special guest joining me. It's Felipe Cardenas from The Athletic. Felipe, welcome to the show.
Hey, happy to be here, Christopher. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing really good, thank you. So let's dive in, Felipe. You're someone that I've been reading and following for quite some time in terms of a lot of your great articles on several different topics, whether it's Querétaro, what happens in Mexico with the violence there, which is a really great investigative piece, as well as, of course, the media business and many other topics, Atlanta United, etc. But how did you get your start? I mean, what was the beginning? What was Felipe Cardenas before The Athletic?
It's a question that I really enjoy answering because I think there are a lot of people, men and women, young men and women that want to get into the business, wonder how you can get into journalism. I studied communication in college. I played soccer in college. And then after that, like, I've always been a writer. My job has always entailed writing. And I was in the advertising industry for a very long time, for 14, 15 years. And around 2018, 2017, 2018, I started a passion project, which was a soccer blog. It was called The Near Post Run. And I covered a lot of what I do now, which is sort of just, you know, European football analysis, news. I would analyze, you know, world football news on my own. And around that same time, The Athletic was launching their soccer vertical. And so this is 2018. And Paul Tenorio, who's our national soccer writer, reached out to me, said, "I read your blog. It's good. Do you want to write for us?" And at the time, I was a creative director at a local agency here in Atlanta. And so I did that on the side. I wrote for The Athletic on the side as a freelancer. And this was obviously around the time when Atlanta United was the season that they won MLS Cup. They had Tata Martino was the coach. It was a South American culture, a lot of South American players. And me, having been born in Colombia but raised in the United States, like I am just very close to South American football culture. And that was a big part of why Paul Tenorio reached out to me. He said, "You speak Spanish, you can understand these guys, you can do the interviews, come join us." And so I did that for the entire season of 2018 freelance. And starting 2019, I left my job in advertising, and I've been a full-time journalist reporter with The Athletic ever since. So like you mentioned, I cover soccer media, international football. I cover the Mexican national team as well, Atlanta United when there's a story to be had, and MLS. I think we all sort of just take it as a team. So it's been great so far.
Now, having a previous role as a creative director and working in an industry, advertising, marketing, how does that help you when you're looking at or analyzing or interviewing people within the media business, specifically soccer?
It's interesting because part of the reason why I think I fell into this job seamlessly is because of my ability to just always been in a writing environment. But marketing, branding, social media, customer engagement, strategy, I think that is a lot of what we do when we cover football and we cover soccer. Yeah, the game and the players, the coaches, they are all their own brand. The networks that we're covering on the media side, CBS, Univision, ESPN, Fox, they have a strong social media presence. The personalities there for the networks are really engaged on social media. And so I think a lot of that just crossed over when I started writing full-time for The Athletic. And, you know, editorially, it was a nice fit for someone like me and even some other writers on our team to go out and cover the sport in a way that is pretty unique. I think that is the ask from The Athletic. What can we do that is different, that is differentiated from the other outlets that are covering the sport, maybe covering the same story? And so it is an interesting question. I think I still think like a marketer. I still think from a brand and product perspective. Obviously, I'm a big soccer junkie as well. I love to analyze the sport and I love to write about it. But together, I do think it makes an interesting piece when you sort of take all that into consideration and the way the sport is evolving.
Is there one particular club that you look at and think, okay, in terms of the brand, in terms of how they market themselves, in terms of creative side of things, that does like not the perfect job, but the near perfect job?
Oh, you put me on the spot there.
I'll give you mine. I'll give you mine just because in the back of my mind, I already had a name in mind, just in terms of, and that's a team I don't follow. I don't support, but it's Manchester City. And I think when they, basically the most recent owners of the club, the way they branded that club, and then also in terms of NYCFC and then kind of the whole family of sites, but even in terms of the soccer website coverage, like I was amazed. I think it was like International Champions Cup maybe a few years ago. And usually in Miami, I've gone to a bunch of games, and there'll be like the one person from the club. Man City must have had a team of about 6 to 7 people for the social media team. They were all over the place taking photographs, doing interviews, doing camera work. And I was just, as one example, just blown away by how much attention they gave to that. Well, most other clubs kind of will do the bare minimum.
It's a good shout. And they have a presence here in the United States as well. I think they've done well on the social media side of Manchester City to obviously connect with the fan base here. You've got me thinking. I mean, I think the club that popped in my head when you asked me, and this isn't because they've done just a fabulous job, but I do think they're very relevant right now. And that was Paris Saint-Germain, PSG. You know, when they signed Lionel Messi over the summer, you could see the intent there. Obviously, yes, they took the opportunity to essentially hijack Lionel Messi from Barcelona, from a sinking ship, and they wanted to buy the best player in the world. But they also knew that engagement was important. I think they see the brand PSG as beginning to cross over into the United States, South America, throughout Africa, Asia. They want to be that club. I think they see themselves, this is my own opinion, as they can be Manchester United, which is a club that is very popular around the world, especially in parts of Asia, India as well. And so when they signed Messi, just the Instagram post that was sort of that revealed the signing had over 80 million views. From the video that confirmed his signing, that was the tease of the video that confirmed his signing on August 10th, had over 24 million views. PSG, and this is I'm reading from a story that I wrote because I wrote about this. 5.6 million Instagram followers were gained in a week. And that was per Newsweek, who also reported on that. And so there you can see the production value, the intent here from these clubs. I think they're investing more in social media production, video especially, and you're going to see these clubs continue to grow on TikTok, on Instagram, and just really attract the younger audience. So I think that's another thing. Like in working in advertising, you're always looking at the younger audience, the younger demographic, the bicultural demographic. How can we get them? And I think football, soccer is doing the exact same thing.
And I think any given weekend, you go to soccer parks or places where kids are playing soccer or teens, and you see so many PSG shirts throughout the United States. I mean, different games I've gone, or travel soccer or tournaments, and sometimes it's just kids wearing it, whether it's Neymar or Mbappe or Messi. The strange thing, to me at least, the strange thing though is you would imagine kind of that beIN Sports' viewing numbers for Ligue 1 games with PSG would be just through the roof, that all these people would be tuning in. But what happens is it ends up being Champions League. I mean, that's the place they go to watch PSG. It's not the French League, which is strange, right?
It is. And, I had a conversation with a representative from Ligue 1 who's tasked with really international expansion. I had this conversation with him a few months ago, and they understand that they feel like they have some of the best players in the world in their league, and they're going to continue to attract audiences in the United States, and those ratings will go up. I think we can all agree that yes, French football is just not the most popular league in the United States. It's competing with the Premier League, with now a Serie A's resurgence, La Liga, and this is in spite of having Lionel Messi, the best player in the world there. And so, and Bien has always been, you tell me, like, I feel like Bien has always been this obscure network. Like, either you have it or you don't. And right. if you don't have it, you have no idea what's going on in the Bien ecosystem. And so they still see PSG League One still sees this relationship as a valuable one. I think they're looking at other leagues is what I was told. They're looking at the NBA and the way the NBA has expanded internationally. And that is really the bar for them. How can they bring French football to a greater audience? And again, we've seen the quotes after Mbappe decided to say no to Real Madrid and stay in League One with PSG, and they see it as a major victory for that league. And so mm-hmm. perhaps that is what moves them up the ladder as far as viewership and international football in the United States. But surely that having Mbappe stay at PSG, I think, will do wonders, perhaps gradually, for the league and around the world.
So two teams that you cover very closely, Atlanta United and the Mexican national team, I would argue from a branding perspective and from kits and from in terms of promotion and everything that goes into, you mean, the product, so to speak, in quotation marks, that Atlanta United and the Mexican national team are shining examples in terms of the Mexican national team, especially in terms of the kits, the colors. Atlanta United, too, do a really good job of marketing themselves. Would you agree?
I agree. Yeah, I think we can start with the Mexican national team because they are just a monolith. It is an absolute machine, a money-generating machine, FMF, especially anything that they do in the United States. And they partner with Adidas. They've been with Adidas for some time. Every kit launch from Mexico is highly, highly successful. And to your point, you know, Mexico, yes, I cover the national team from a footballing perspective, but I've written about kit launches. I've written about the controversy of Mexico not having a green kit until a World Cup year and why Adidas does that. And sort of the reaction from Mexican fans, both in Mexico and the United States, and whether they like the jerseys or not, they go and buy them. It is automatic. They will buy the jerseys. That sort of passion for Mexico stateside is, I feel, it's just unprecedented for any other country here in North America. And so it is really interesting to see those trends continue to be strong. And Atlanta United is a very well-established brand in MLS. I think, you know, in North America, perhaps a ways to go, but at the height in 2018 and even in 2019, I think the people I spoke to around Liga MX were obviously very aware of Atlanta United because of Tata Martino. And I think they started really well from a brand engagement perspective. Since then, as there's been a lot of turnover at the club, I think from a social media perspective, there's room for improvement, but they are still, I believe, the only MLS club with over 1 million followers on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And so that's a huge number. I do know that they put a lot of emphasis and effort into their social media engagement, and they want to be a big brand. And I think in order to do that, there are steps to be taken, but it's certainly one that Atlanta has started out really well. And they were, for those first few years, really a shining example of what to do, how to launch a brand and a new club in MLS.
Yeah, and I would say, too, living in Florida, you don't see a lot of MLS shirts that often. But when you do, if you do, mostly they're Atlanta United most of the time.
Right.
Some strange kind of like I don't know, kind of a LA Galaxy shirt from like 10 years ago, so, some like random shirt. But Atlanta United definitely has a strong brand. And I think from what we see, too, in Florida, oftentimes if it's people from Georgia going on vacation to Florida or just hanging out, whatever, doing what they're doing, oftentimes they're wearing those Atlanta United shirts. They're really, really proud of that club.
Right. And that's going to continue, I think, despite perhaps the decline of Atlanta United on the pitch and the turnover that they've had from a coaching perspective. The fan engagement is still very high, and I think they've just become a football club, a soccer club. They go through ups and downs, and their fans educate themselves, and they want to be heard, and so I think you've seen that transformation from Atlanta on the field and on social media. They're very vocal, the fans are. They'll tell you that they're not happy with what's happening. But they are a club that, yes, like I think the league sort of looks to them to be an influencer from everything, from the coaches that they hire, the players that they bring in. And unfortunately, I do feel like they've fallen into this Adidas trap, the template trap, if you will, of the MLS kits. But they came out of the gate with a very nice looking first home kit. And they are similar to Mexico. Obviously, the numbers are not close, but I do feel like Atlanta has a similar pull. When they launch a kit, even if the fans don't really like it, I think they're going to go and get it.
All right, so let's move on to some of the TV streaming news. And from this past week, a couple of major stories that came through. Of course, there were many, many ones, other ones too. But the two that kind of jumped out at us here, the first one is Real Madrid against Liverpool in terms of the viewing numbers on this one. The most watched Champions League final of all time in U.S. history. This one, a total of 5.3 million viewers. CBS Sports had 2.7 million viewers, beating Univision, 2.6 million. So definitely, I was surprised by this because like Real Madrid, if I had to pick two teams to be the best representation of a viewing audience, on the Spanish language side, I would say Real Madrid. On the English language side, I would still probably say, even though they're not doing that well, Manchester United, in terms of fan base, kind of a devout fan base that in large numbers, that hardcore to the core, and then probably Liverpool number two, and then Chelsea number three. So in many ways, it became almost a dream final, or you could say a dream final for both CBS and Univision. But I'm a little bit surprised here, Felipe, as far as the numbers and CBS beating Univision, beating Real Madrid. What's your overall take on this? I mean, is this a sign of things to come in terms of the future, too, or like where CBS might run away with it?
Yeah, I don't know if they'll run away with it, but it's certainly a big victory for CBS. I mean, let's be honest, it's a new product for them. I think this is their second, third year. It's hard to remember. I think they started 2020, and no one wants to go back to 2020. But they've really elevated the product from where it was before with Turner Sports. And I remember when Real Madrid and Liverpool officially qualified for this final. And the all-English final of Manchester City and Liverpool was no longer. And I sent a tweet saying, you know, this is going to be huge for CBS. It's going to be huge because it was going to be on big CBS. Yes, they would stream it, but they were going to bring that audience into CBS. They weren't getting the all-English final. Who the studio team, when we were on a call before the final, I asked them, like, what is it bigger now? Is it a bigger final when you have Real Madrid and Liverpool versus Man City and Liverpool? And I think the response was interesting. Jamie Carragher saying, like, you know, even him, he doesn't love an all English final. And I think that's what Champions League football should be. The two best teams from different countries. I think it just, these were two of the biggest brands in world football. And for Univision, yes, for Univision, it does bring, Real Madrid brings another level of fandom. There are so many Latinos in the United States that are Real Madrid fans, and they really brought it. But for CBS, who has, I think, started a trend as far as the sort of talent selection that they have, the tone of their studio shows, the overall production value of what European football and European competitions should be. It's younger, it's looser, it's a combination of, it can be formal at times, it's informal at others. And that has been, I think, a big draw. It's not for everybody. And it had to grow on me as well, personally, if I'm honest. But it certainly has brought in an important audience. And we're talking about the biggest club tournament in the world. So really no surprise that the numbers were high. But yes, a little bit surprised that CBS actually won this one over Univision.
Yeah, CBS, you have to look at the talent in the studio. And it's hard to imagine English language speaking pundits that are bigger names than these. I mean, Thierry Henry, Jimmy Carragher, Peter Schmeichel. Micah Richards is not kind of those, one of those big names, but he's entertaining, that's for sure. Right. And again, he's the type of person that's kind of divisive in a way that some people don't like that style, where it's overly jokey or overly. But he's got a kind of infectious laughter, and to me, it definitely sometimes gets over the top a little bit too much. But oftentimes it's fun, it's lighthearted, and there's a little bit of banter between kind of the Manchester City and the Liverpool and the Man United. So from a Premier League perspective and from an English language perspective, it's pleasing to watch. Now, if you're a Real Madrid fan and you're an English language person or someone who speaks English, then you might be like, this is really not coverage for me. It doesn't speak to me. So you may go to Univision and say, okay, well, I'm going to watch that there. At least they'll be a little bit more kind of centric to their analysis, or maybe not so kind of in favor of the Premier League teams. And that's hard, though, too, oftentimes, to find somebody who's an expert on Real Madrid on the same set as Liverpool, because oftentimes, you mean, the talent is hired months in advance. But this does send a big signal, I think, Felipe. You wrote a story, I think it was last year, actually, about Univision and when they, in terms of their TV battle or TV ratings battle with CBS. And at that time, some of the quotes from Univision or Univision were less boring than the Anglo presentation, and we're way more fun with the way we do our color commentating. And I would agree with both of those things. I mean, sometimes the Anglo side is boring, especially if the match doesn't live up to its hype. It can be boring. And sometimes the color commentating is boring because it's more matter of fact. It's kind of, here's what happened, analyzing a situation. But that's the type of broadcast that we've been brought up on for many of us. That's what we're used to.
It is. And I'll tell you what, from talking for that story, and what I came away with from speaking to executives at Univision was they are competing. It is very much a competition, and they are open about it, and they're confident in the products that they have, in the talent that they have, in the production value that they have right now, in the future of the network, and the way that the demographics are changing in the United States. They feel like they're just in the best spot possible and with room to grow. And I agree. You know, I grew up, like I said, I grew up in a South American household, a Spanish speaking household. And I'm used to seeing and hearing and experiencing a soccer broadcast from a Latino perspective, where it's louder, it's more energetic. The analysis is a bit deeper. And you have a combination of sort of an eccentric play by play person paired with a more tempered and analyst. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I just became used to. And that's what you get from Univision. The difference between CBS and Univision right now is, like, I feel like you know what you're getting with Univision. You're getting top analysts that have been covering these competitions for decades, literally decades. And then they do a great job of bringing in the new analysts, new voices for every game. They have Bam Zamorano, Ivan Zamorano, he's done such a great job with Univision. Christo Storchkov has his own style as well. And Javier Zanetti, the former Argentina captain, Inter Milan legend, I think is coming into his own as well. I think he brings that prototypical Argentine style of analysis that is a bit baritone, a bit slower pitched, but he's paired with Luis Omar Tapia, who's just a living legend, if you will. And so that, I think that is cool. And it's a great alternative to have, even if you're not a Spanish speaker, and they know it. And so CBS, I do think on the flip side, you know, on the same call that we had with the CBS talent before the Champions League final, Pete Radovich, you know, their senior creative director, executive producer, was just as confident, saying that he would line up his show with other sports shows in the United States, but at the same time knowing that they haven't hit it big time. They're not perfect, and so I like it. I like the competition here. I think it's healthy and it's great for the viewers, no doubt.
Yeah, two things on that too. I think it's interesting how CBS Sports has positioned their producer, Pete Radovich, who we've interviewed, you've interviewed, very likable guy, knows his stuff, and has definitely added a flair to CBS Sports' coverage of soccer. But it's interesting, though, too, that, kind of the NBC Sports top producer, the ESPN top producer, so on and so forth. Fox, too, is more behind the scenes. You and I probably know those people and have probably spoken to them before, but it's not often that we get to an opportunity to interview them on a press conference. So it's I think in a way with CBS, what they've done is on the creative side, is said like, hey, this is an important part of our blueprint, so to speak, for covering soccer. This producer is making a lot of the key decisions, and he has a team of people that are working with him to get everything right. But almost kind of having him in a creative position to say, hey, he's there. He's going to answer your questions. He's going to talk about why they do things a certain way. The second point, and this is more of a question, Felipe, to you, is do you think there's a way to blend the two different styles together? Mm. Kind of the Latin, Spanish language, very excitable, very passionate, extremely passionate, the goal calls. And then the English side, English language side, which is more reserved, more kind of matter of fact, more statistics perhaps at times. And sometimes using silence to accentuate your commentating. Is there a way to blend the two together to make it work?
I think so. And I want to briefly touch on your first point. I agree that creatively CBS has made a big strides and an effort to showcase you know, that creative strength that they have in house. And I wrote about it recently with their Serie A coverage, the way they've really doubled down on a specific style of teaser, a documentary style teaser that they do for each one of their broadcasts, whether it's Champions League, U.S. Men's National Team, CONCACAF, or Serie A. They have a tone, a style. And they've taken chances with different sort of talents, people, perhaps untraditional talents mixed with the more recognizable voices. So I think that is something that's working in their favor and something to make note. Perhaps other networks will do the same. Creatively, they know what they're doing. So, but I do think that there is a way to bring both Spanish-English commentary together. And right now there are some very, very good bilingual play-by-play people that are doing this every single day, covering Copa Sudamericana, covering Copa Libertadores in English, mm-hmm. with a very Spanish-first perspective.
Yep.
And I do believe that is the future. You know, that is the future. The audience right now that both Univision and CBS really wants to attract are, you know, I think the essentially third generation Latinos that speak English at home. English is their first language, but they are around this a Latino culture, and they are really consuming content in both languages in a way that is bringing the sport to these households in a different way, digitally streaming. You know, Spanish speakers, Latinos in the U.S., U.S. Hispanics, they trend upwards as far as technology goes. It's like they are on their phones all the time. They're multi-screeners. And so that is the future. I totally agree. And I think about that often, Christopher, honestly, mm-hmm. like I'll watch a game and think, you know, it's possible to have that sort of voice where you're getting the South American goal calls. You're getting that sort of the tone, the experience, the feeling, the culture of a game on your television, but also perhaps the best of both worlds. So perhaps it's not the easiest thing to do, but I think there's talent out there that can make it happen.
Yeah, for sure. And a recent example for me, at least, was Copa Libertadores, watching one of the games. I think it was Boca Juniors against one of the Brazilian sides. But the game was pretty decent, but English language commentary by Juan Arango. And during the commentating, it sounded almost like he was singing. It was like really, and it made me laugh. It made me smile more than laugh. It made me like kind of laugh, kind of smile and go like, wow, that's really good. How he's able to really kind of take something and turn it into something really, really interesting, where it was like, oh, wow, that's I haven't heard that before. I've heard that in Spanish language commentary, where there is sometimes more of a, I mean, not singing, but kind of playing with, I mean, just playing with words. And
yes.
So absolutely, yeah. There's definitely room for opportunities there, for sure.
I mean, I'm used to watching games. When I watch Colombia, the national team, like I have to find like a weird stream to get the game on my computer. And I still can't believe that after a goal, there's like salsa music in the background. You know, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's what I grew up with.
That's awesome.
Still doing it. So, so yeah, it's definitely, perhaps we don't go that route.
Right.
But I think anything that's more exciting, more engaging, you know, certainly that's the future, no doubt.
Yeah. And to me, that's entertaining. I mean, that, to me, that's really, you know what I mean, that's part of the show, part of the game. So the other big news item out this week was that Premier League coverage in the United States is going to change starting in August when NBC Sports starts up their new contract, which they renewed for another 6 years. What it means is that a lot of the contracts with talent also ended at the end of this season. So Ola White, Rebecca Lowe, the two Robbies, etc. And it was revealed this week that NBC Sports decided not to renew the contract for Ola White. Instead, the key decision makers there at NBC Sports have decided to hire Peter Drury, who's arguably the world's one of the world's top English language soccer commentators. What's interesting, I think, is Peter Drury is not a kind of a very, I mean, I guess he's more reserved. He's not the type of person who's going to be like Arlo, kind of doing a lot of the pitch side commentaries and hosting things. He's more of your old traditional school, old school traditional commentator. But so big change here, definitely. But what's your opinion, Felipe, about this big change that NBC made?
It was big news. It's big news. You know, Arlo White, without a doubt, the voice of the Premier League in the United States, one of them at least, one of the most popular. And for NBC to make this move to decide we were ready for a different voice, and in my opinion, I think Peter Drury and Arlo White are different in many ways. I think so many times we just assume that a British speaker, a British play-by-play is going to be the same no matter who's in that chair. But I think they are different styles, and you know, it's interesting because NBC is the standard. They've set the bar so high as far as what football and broadcasts must look like, sound like, feel like in the United States, but like I mentioned before, I think there's a shift happening in bringing a looser format, combining that with high-end studio production and elite talent, yes. But you know, I was reading some of the comments in the Serie A story that I wrote for The Athletic recently, and a commenter said, sometimes I watch NBC's Premier League coverage and I think that it's as if they're commenting on a funeral, you know? And I went back to what Pete Radovich told me. He's like, are we saving lives here? No, it doesn't have to be that serious. And even though the talent at NBC for Premier League, you know, Rebecca Lowe, the two Robbies, as you mentioned, are very good, I feel like they have an opportunity to make a bit of a change, to change the tone a little bit. I think the audience would be open to it. They know the brand already.
Yep.
And I think what's more interesting, and perhaps you have more on this than I do, is, you know, really what is next for Arlo White? You know, he is the voice of the Chicago Fire for MLS, and certainly this is not a bad time to be a free agent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's been 9 years of NBC coverage since 2013 now to 2022. So in terms of my thoughts on Arlo, it was exciting in the beginning for many, many years, but then like the last few years it started to sound repetitive, or I was almost wanting a breath of fresh air, like a different voice or something different. So we've got that now for the next 6 years. But for Arlo, I mean, really the sky's the limit now, because I mean, I think a lot of this in terms of Ted Lasso and his cameo appearances on that show have helped him in terms of even further establish his credibility in the United States. So whether it's Fox Sports and the World Cup coverage later this year from Qatar, maybe Arlo could do some of the England games or some of the other games for the other countries. I mean, Arlo's done the Olympics in the past. Then we've got the Major League Soccer TV rights saga that just keeps on continuing on and on. But soon, I'm sure, maybe this month, we'll have a decision there, and we'll find out for 2023 onwards who's that kind of top-tier American broadcasters that's going to be showing most of the games. It is interesting because the way that we are, I mean, look, this year, basically, if you think about it, CBS Sports, their number one commentator is Clive Tilsley, who's one of the kind of legendary English commentators, still living in the UK, but that's okay. But he's been calling the games for us in the United States. John Champion, one of the best also, works for ESPN, moved to the United States. Peter Drury, as far as we know, is going to be staying in England, and then the lead commentator for NBC Sports. So across all those names, Arlo's probably the other biggest one. So if Arlo could go to Fox Sports and join John Strong and others, seems like a good fit, especially with all of the coverage that Fox has picked up. So everything from the Euros, Euro 2024, 28, Copa America, Gold Cup, etc., etc. There's so much content, so much programming. So I think Arlo would have plenty of work to do there.
I just want to comment. Like I agree. I think it's a big opportunity for Fox perhaps to latch on to this very recognizable voice. I agree. I feel like Arlo White, as good as he is, as good as he has been, as important as he has been to the brand, the Premier League brand in the United States. For me personally, and again, I think television, I tell people that I interview on the TV side all the time, TV, especially live TV, is very hard, very difficult. But yeah, I think Arlo White for me became very formal when I would watch him and hear him on a Premier League broadcast. Very knowledgeable, obviously, but I think it was nearing that very traditional sense. And I think that's where the Premier League in the United States, where the coverage can start to evolve. I also think Fox Sports, you know, especially on the English side, like you mentioned, they've just gobbled up all these rights to big time tournaments. And I think they have an opportunity to evolve a bit in the studio, change the tone a little bit, keep, you know, establish something. You know, we do talk a lot about Stu Holden and John Strong, who've done a great job. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, like, who else is there? Who else is there? You know, John Paul de la Camera is doing the games, the Nations League games, very recognizable voice. But yep. I think Fox has a big opportunity, really, to change their perception as well and really take advantage of the properties that they've acquired.
Yeah, and it also could be time for NBC Sports to, I mean, I don't know yet, but in terms of the two Robbies or Graham Lasso, one of the co-commentators that works with Arlo and Lee Dixon, there's a possibility of some changes there too. And maybe some more diversity or maybe some differences there in terms of hiring decisions that they have for this summer. So on that one, I'm sure either you, Felipe, or I will probably be covering that in detail once that information gets out there. So one more thing before we go, and that's we have to talk about it for a little bit at least with the MLS TV media rights. This is a story that's been going on for almost a year now in terms of, I think it was last summer that Fox went exclusively to its current rights holders, ESPN, Fox, and Univision, and said, hey, we want to give you an opportunity. You're the current rights holders. Let us know if you'd like to renew. Let us know what you're interested in, what's working, what's not working. Let's talk about it. Let's go through there. A year later, it looks like we're back in the same spot, pretty much, other than Apple TV. But what about Univision? I mean, like, Univision seems to be, especially with Leagues Cup and the expectations for that for next year, that seems to be on the MLS growth charts. I think Univision is one of those ones that keeps on going up and up and up in terms of the growing number of Hispanics in the United States and how MLS fits within that. But what's your take on that? I mean, do you think Univision is going to go for more the same of what they've had in the past or not?
I don't think so. You know, and in speaking to a source at Univision that's been very close to these negotiations with Major League Soccer, from what I can gather and from what I've been told, the scope of work, I think, is what they are really looking to change. And in very specific ways, you know, Univision has been a great partner for MLS. And I do feel like based on the conversations I've had is that they see the league as missing out on some important opportunities from a broadcast perspective. I think there are too many games. There are too many teams. I heard the word cannibalizing once, that the league is cannibalizing itself on on weekend match days, fans don't know what to watch. It's difficult for the programmers to really cover these games the way that they like. Leagues Cup is going to be very important to Univision. They know it. They know it because they have the product proof as far as Liga MX and the way that they draw audiences. Primetime coverage is very important to Univision, and appointment viewing to them is what they would like to really change regarding their MLS coverage. Build brands, like bring the brands in Major League Soccer that have the best fan bases, the most passionate fan bases, that have Latino fan bases, like the LA teams, Inter Miami, even Atlanta United, which is a big brand, as we've discussed, and put those teams together and put those matches on primetime and attract the viewership in that way. I think the scope of work is what they want to change. They want to stay committed to the league, but they want to start to shift some of the strategies based on what they know is working. And so, you know, rivalries, I've had conversations with people at Univision about how does MLS create national brands? You know, that isn't happening yet. MLS has done a great job locally, regionally. You see that in the MLS attendance numbers. But beyond that, it's not a national product yet. And that is what I think Univision excels at, is really elevating a product and a club and bringing these club cultures and traditions together. So that's where I see Univision wanting to be in these MLS rights negotiations. But as you've been following, as my colleagues at The Athletic have been following, specifically Sam Stachel, it's been a head scratcher, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, in I think the beginning of March, or was it? No, it was end of February when Don Garber, the MLS commissioner, said, we're going to be ready. I'm paraphrasing, but a deal at the end of March. Yep. And it's June. And so that does not bode well. We've seen the numbers and they're not good. And so something has to happen. You know, perhaps expectations need to be lowered a little bit and then go from there and gradually grow.
Yeah, I think in some ways, too, that in terms of trying to get that national reach and that national interest, you almost have to develop it. And I think it's the Whip Around show is something where it doesn't exist right now with MLS. Like each weekend going into, I mean, usually like 7:30 Eastern time, you can go on ESPN Plus and there's sometimes half a dozen or more MLS games starting or overlapping at that time. And it's like, okay, which game do I watch? And I end up just kind of scrolling through and jumping from game to game to game and not really finding that kind of great match that's going to pull me in and just blow me away. And I think we've seen this now with Gold Rush, with the Premier League. We've seen this. Serie A did it on the final day of the season. The Golasso show, Zona Football from Tuduene. So a lot of these programs have done a really great job of, I mean, for me personally, covering the Europa League without the Golasso show, forget about it. Yeah. It would be just like, there's no way. But so if the schedule does stay the same, where there are a lot of games happening at the same time on a Saturday night, which is on a local level, makes complete sense in terms of ticket sales and being the game to watch on a Saturday night, is for the national audience that doesn't have an MLS club anywhere near them. I mean, give them an opportunity to watch a Whip Around show that kind of talks about the players and gives them more information about, you mean, why you should be watching this one, what the factors are off the field or on the field, some of the kind of the stories.
It's there for the taking. You know, I think when we talk about shifts in trends and tone, you know, I want to shout out to, you know, ESPN has done that in a way. You know, I wrote a story about Football Americas and that those Sebi Salazar and Herc Gomez, they've taken a different approach to the way they cover the game. They're younger, bicultural, and they know the sort of audience that they're attracting. And they tried a Whip Around show recently for U.S. Open Cup. And it was pretty well received. You know, I think it was just like a baby step, but clearly that concept is can be successful. You know, we've seen it with NFL Red Zone. That is sort of the inspiration behind a lot of these shows. And that's how a lot of viewers that's how they'll watch games. That's how they would rather be informed about what's happening. And I think options are good. I think what throughout this conversation that we've had here today, I think that's what I take away. It looks like there are a lot of options for viewers, but clearly MLS needs to take advantage of that and I think step out of their comfort zone as well.
Right.
And just try to do something different. Take some risks. That was what I was told from Univision. Take risks. You know, that was sort of like the plea for MLS to do that. They're there to help. You know, Univision is there to help them. But if the status quo is just not taking the league anywhere right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Univision, I used to like the Friday night games they used to have in the summertime, sometimes usually a doubleheader with Ramsey Sandoval in English, actually, and Keith Costigan. They were doing English broadcast and also Spanish broadcast. And those were great because those were something different. And I'm sure the numbers weren't through the roof, but it did for a lot of people, actually, kind of bring in an audience that wasn't used to watching soccer on a Friday night when usually there's not much going on. But yeah, that's absolutely in terms of MLS getting out of its comfort zone. That's hopefully there's some conversations going on there. All right, Felipe. So thank you so much for being on the show. First of all, I really, really appreciate it. I think you're a perfect fit in terms of what we talk about on a weekly basis. But I want to let you know. I mean, I want to see if you can share your where we can find you on social media and on different websites, and also what stories you have coming up in the next few weeks to the few months.
Of course. Well, first of all, I'm a big fan of World Soccer Talk. I always have been. It's a news outlet for me. It's where I get a lot of my information. I get an email, a weekly email. I follow you guys on Twitter. And so it's a pleasure to be on the show. First time for me. I listen to the podcast as well. So I had a great time. You can find me, fans, listeners, on Twitter at Felipe Carr. You know, be sure to follow the Athletic Soccer's account at the Athletic SCCR and all our writers. And you know, I think for me it's a World Cup year, and so it's a big opportunity to branch out. You know, we've been talking about this, get out of our comfort zone. That is what a World Cup year will do for a writer as well. So I'm going to step away a little bit from traditional coverage, look at international football stories, be close to the Mexican national team and all the drama that always surrounds them. I'm helping out a little bit on the U.S. men's national team coverage. And of course, any story that pops up that we think is interesting, you know, we're going to cover at The Athletic. And so far, I think we've done a great job. But thanks for getting me on here and letting me, you know, do a little bit of self-promotion. Always a pleasure.
Okay. Well, it's great to have Felipe on. Let's move on to the listener mailbag. Chris is first up talking about Apple TV Plus and MLS. And Chris says, when it comes to Apple TV Plus potentially pulling out of the bidding for the MLS rights, the main reason why I think they did so is because they are waiting to see what happens between DirecTV and the NFL in the next few months over the fate of Sunday Ticket. Now, Chris, from what I understand, so last week we were reporting that MLS, it looked like Apple TV Plus was not interested any longer. Now we're hearing from some additional sources, including some of Kartik's sources, that now Apple TV Plus is back in and they're interested. So oftentimes with a lot of these negotiations and discussions, it does go back and forth where it gets hot and cold, where they're in and then they're not interested and then it comes back. But the latest we've heard is that Apple TV Plus is still in and still interested, mostly in the out-of-market coverage. And then looking at ESPN picking up a smaller package of television games for the big games. And then, of course, Univision, as Felipe mentioned, too, looking at trying to get some more big games and really kind of have a way to figure out how to broadcast these nationally and make it a big deal. Next up is Drew. Drew says, MLS is in a difficult position. It won't go out of business anytime soon, but it's having trouble establishing itself as a major sports league in North America alongside the Big Four. The way I see it is that MLS teams have, for the most part, successfully built passionate and loyal fan bases, which help create a game day atmosphere that resembles the big leagues of Europe and Latin America. The problem is that those same fans who are really into their team for the most part couldn't care less about the league as a whole. I'm definitely in this camp. I don't consider myself an MLS fan, just a fan of the team I follow. All right, listeners, so we've run out of time to get to all of your questions and feedback. So we'll go ahead and we'll go through those next week in addition to any comments that you may have. If you do have any questions, comments, or feedback for us, be sure to reach out. We'd love to read your comment out on air. So through the website, it's worldsoccertalk.com, and then go to podcasts, and then just put the comments in your comments section. On Facebook, it's facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. You can leave us a message there. On Twitter, we're at worldsoccertalk. And I think that covers about everything, right, in terms of the ways to reach us. But we'd love to hear from you. Thank you for listening. You can get a new episode usually every Thursday on everything from Amazon Music, Spotify, Pandora, Stitcher, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, Overcast, and of course, worldsoccertalk.com. And if you like the show, we'd really appreciate it if you can give us a review on iTunes or Apple Music or Google Play. So on behalf of the whole team here at World Soccer Talk, big weekend ahead. Enjoy your football.